Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Fiction. Science fiction. Horror. Fantasy. Crime. LGBT. Thriller.
You have now entered the House of Mystery with your hosts, Eric Shapiro, David North Martino, John Copenhaver, and Al Warren.
Heard on KCAA 106.5 FM Los Angeles,
102.3 FM Riverside,
and 105.0 AM Palm Springs.
Welcome back into the House of Mystery. We are at the interview part of the show. Joining me today is author Marshall Thornton. Thank you for being here.
Thank you for having me.
Marshall, so you've written quite a few books here. I've been looking over your resume here. What got you into writing so much? Like, this isn't just like a biography. This is a collection.
Wow. That's a complicated question. I've been writing since I was a kid, and I've always written. And, you know, I have, I guess, over 30 books at this point. And part of that is that I've been making a living at it. So when you make a living as an indie author, you have to write a lot of books.
Yeah, I guess you'd have to get a lot out there and to keep the momentum going too, right?
Yes. The way that publicity works for someone at my level is you have to hit your audience frequently so that they don't forget you. And once they're there, you can take a little bit more time. But it, the more books you have, the more exposure you get.
Right. Now, it looks like you write in primarily, you've got two mystery series. And so you're doing series of books. When you do a series like that, like you've got the Boys Town Mysteries and the Pink's Video. So when you take a series like Boys Town Mysteries, what are you telling a long-term story about the same group of people, or is it a completely different story with each book?
I'm telling a long-term story with individual stories. Each book has its own mystery, but then you have the characters and the stories of their lives. I went to film school at UCLA, and so I have a lot of background in film and television. And so when I write a book series, it's similar to a television series in the sense that each book is contained, but then there's an overall arc to the series.
That's interesting. So you have the same characters kind of going through different things with each book, you might say.
Yes.
So now, with these characters, where do they come from for you? Like, how do you decide like, I always find this fascinating because I'm writing true crime. I do that side of it. So I don't get to choose my characters. So you do. So when you create these characters, do you get the ideas from people you know, family, someone you see on in a shopping mall or a coffee shop? How does that come to you?
Well, they come in different ways. You know, obviously, it is a lot of observation and things. You know, the Boys Town books are set in the 80s. And so I did use a lot of experiences that I had during that period and a lot of people I knew. When I started writing the Pink series, which is set in the 90s, part of what I did there was I wanted to set it apart from the other series. So in a lot of ways, the main character is opposite the main character in Boys Town. So that was an interesting way to start thinking of a character, is to do different things with him.
Yeah. How do you develop someone like that? So you have a character in a book, and as they go through different experiences, how do you decide how they're going to react or act? Is there something, is it just feel? I find that interesting.
Actually, some of it is how I feel about other things I've read. I'm, of course, a big reader and a big mystery reader. And certainly when you write a long series, and the Boys Town series has 13 books and two prequels, you know, and by the end of it, I think of the character as having PTSD because he's experienced all of these things. You know, a lot of times, you know, the bigger mystery series, the characters seem Teflon and they don't really react to what they've experienced. And that always bothers me. So I really kind of dig in and think about, well, this is what he's gone through in the last few years of his life. How would you really react to that? What would you really do? So.
And so do you have an underlying story you're trying to tell? Like there would be the basic mystery and what's going on in the story, but is there something else you want people to get?
Well, both series have AIDS stories in them. And I think it's, you know, so much happened in the 80s to people that seems important to collect. And so, you know, the main character, Nick Nowak, has friends who have the virus and experiences things because of that. And then, I don't want to give too much away, but it's also quite involved in the Pink's books, which are set in the early 90s in California. So, you know, capturing those experiences seems really important to me.
So the AIDS epidemic, so that was kind of a, do you compare that to kind of COVID today?
Well,
I mean, I sort of look at it back in the 80s, Reagan pretty much ignored it, didn't want to talk about it, and avoided it as much as he could. And I kind of get the same feeling with Trump. It's not like a virus of just homosexuals. So, Trump has a different agenda, but in general, he's pretty much avoided the COVID and not wanted to talk about it unless he has to.
I know that in my own experience that I am relying on my experience of AIDS in this, in the sense of, you know, you look at the odds, you calculate them, you just have to just make decisions about what you're willing to risk. And I learned, you know, not to push people. You know, people, you know, if they're concerned, if they don't want to do things, then you respect that. You accept what their limitations are, and then, you know, and certainly everyone has a right to make their own choices, but, you know, to a degree, you know, you do have to protect people and you do have to accept what their risk level is.
Do you think the stigma's kind of has it gotten better, for someone with AIDS today than it was 20 years ago?
Yes, absolutely. There's a lot more available. There's a lot less fear. There's less stigma. And there's a lot more hope than there was. I mean, if you think about AIDS in 1990 and 1992, I mean, it was assumed to be a death sentence, and you were going to die in a few years. And now I think, I mean, I've known people who have converted, zero converted, I think is what they call it. and they go right into studies, you know, and go right on medication, and they're actually sort of prized by the doctors because they have them to look at, and they do very well, actually. So it is very different, certainly.
Yeah. Do you think the community's better with it than they were? Like, you know, if someone's positive, do they get kind of put aside like they used to? Like, you know what I mean? Kind of, I don't want to say boycott it, but sort of almost, you know, is there something that's attached to having AIDS within the community itself?
No, I don't think so. And, you know, different times, you know, it would kind of go back and forth. You know, it's like there were times when people were very frightened of anyone who had AIDS. And then there were other times when it seemed very chic, you know, and there were actually people in the community who wanted to get it because they didn't feel included without it. I mean, it's interesting. The gay community is interesting in the sense that there's always people at both ends of the spectrum.
It's strange how people are sometimes.
Pardon me?
It's really strange how people are about things sometimes.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. But I think it's, you know, it depends on people's individual experience and how they perceive things.
So what's your relationship with your characters? I ask that because I've had so many people on doing crime fiction and fiction and all of this. And a lot of people are, they tell me their characters are like their kids. They are very important to them. Do you find that with yourself too?
I mean, they are important. They do mean something. I don't really think of them as children, but I like to think they matter. You know, they're certainly, they're kind of like, I guess I would view them more as avatars. You know, they're pieces of me that I send out into the world to hopefully do good.
Well, that's interesting. That's good. So let's talk about mystery. So were you influenced by old-time mystery radio or old-time mystery books? Like what, where do you draw your kind of your thriller side from?
Well, I think probably my most important influence would be Joseph Hansen, who wrote a gay mystery series in the 70s, 80s, and 90s. He was very influential on me and on many people. And then also I'm very influenced by Sue Grafton's books, mostly in this, but in the sense that she does a lot of minutia in the characters' lives. And I really enjoy building the picture of what their lives are separate of the mystery part. Cause that's where you really get to like, slide in little bits of history and things that people really wouldn't necessarily think about without the genre element. Gives you like a lot of freedom to do that. If that makes any sense.
Yeah. No, I'd imagine. And I imagine when you're writing, like when you're doing these series in the 80s and 90s, you're, you have to go back to that time and sort of emphasize what it was like to live then.
Right. And, you know, one of the things I hear a lot from readers is that they really enjoy taking that little time travel, you know, people who lived through it remember it, and they enjoy remembering, and they enjoy the different things that I mention and the different places that the characters go and the things that they talk about. And actually, in a lot of books that are contemporary, there's sort of a taboo about talking about current events. And because I'm writing nostalgia, I actually do have the characters talk about things in the way that we do. You know, it's like, for me, no one could ever write about 2020 without actually having conversations about COVID and conversations about Trump, you know, and then those conversations as a writer are great because they then show you who the characters are as they take different positions.
Yeah, because, you know, I think people look back at things remembering mainly the good things. They don't really hold on to a lot of the bad stuff. So when you look back at the 80s and 90s, you know, you people a lot of times will say, it must have been so good to live back then. Well, there were stresses and problems then, too.
Oh, absolutely. We have a tendency to look at our contemporary world and say, oh my God, this is so shocking and new. And, you know, the divisions in this country go back 150 years.
Yeah, I know.
They're just particularly evident right now, but they've always been there. And it's odd in many ways because socially, there's a lot in this country that's much more comfortable than it was when I was a kid, although certain elements of politics were much better when I was a kid.
Yeah, but I think it sort of represents the time. Like, you know, back in the Reagan days, we knew that there was an oppression from Reagan and the Republicans against gay men and stuff. And I think that I guess we weren't quite as aware of it on the day-to-day, because you didn't have Fox News, you didn't have the internet and all this stuff. So you would hear bits on the news and you would hear things happen, but it wasn't in your face every single day. You weren't on like Facebook or Twitter and seeing comments constantly and people flying things back and forth.
Well, yes and no. In the 80s, 70% of the population didn't think it was okay to be gay.
Right.
And that number has flipped. Now that's 30% of the population. Now, certainly that 30% of the population has a much bigger megaphone right now. But in the 80s, you were much more likely, I think, to come into contact with someone who would say something to you that was offensive and expect you to just swallow it. Whereas now they kind of blindly do it on the internet. That's true. But, you know, it's like people are much better behaved in person than I think they were in the 70s and 80s.
Yeah, it's interesting. It's really interesting. So your characters, do you get into relationships as well?
Do I get?
Well, I mean, you call them gay mysteries. So are we talking the characters are all gay and that sort of...
Most the main characters are gay, and a lot of the characters are gay, and they're in different kinds of relationships, certainly. Nick Nowak has, like, three main relationships during that series. And then in the Pink's video mysteries, you know, that revolves around a guy who's lost his lover to AIDS, and he's very close with his neighbors, who are a couple who live downstairs from him, and, you know, they run around solving murders. So, I mean, there are straight people in all the books, but, you know, they kind of mix as you do in and out. But they both take place in what were at the time very gay neighborhoods.
So who do you think you have as readers? Like, do you have any sort of an idea of what kind of people read your book? Is it men, women, age group, or anything like that?
It's shifted over the years. You know, I started out working with several M/M romance publishers, and even though my books are not romance, and those are more companies run by women, directed at women, and so I do have a large female audience. But I've, over the years, I've collected a lot of male readers, approximately my own age, in the 50s and 60s. And, you know, I would say a lot of my female readers are older, too. And some of that is that readers tend to skew older. I mean, I know young people read, but not quite in the numbers.
So why do you think so many females?
Well, there is a whole genre of romance that has to do with gay men, M/M, and it's a lot of women who like romance books, but are more interested in men than reading straight stuff. So, and they cross over. I mean, very few people are monolithic when it comes to reading. So, you know, you can't actually go into what is typically a romance environment and say, hey, I have this mystery, and you know, a certain number of people will respond and pick you up and start reading you. So.
So now your newest book coming out, I guess you say Christmas Day, Merry yes. Christmas, it's called Cash Out. Now it's part of the Pink's Video Mysteries. So what's the basic premise? What's the idea behind it? It's book five. So in these five books, what is it centered around a certain story or idea?
Well, it's centered around Noah Valentine, who owns a gay video store in Silver Lake. And his neighbors and the people who work in his store.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
If you thought the only way to get a more defined jawline with natural-looking results was through surgery, think again. Juvederm Volux XC is a non-surgical injectable gel filler that improves moderate to severe loss of jawline definition and can help you achieve natural-looking results with little downtime. Even better, this improved definition lasts up to 1 year with optimal treatment. No maintenance required. Improve jawline definition for a smooth, sculpted look with Juvederm Volux XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. So start getting your best night's sleep in sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. And you can try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee plus 15% off your first order with code BUTTERY. So head to bollandbranch.com today. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
and his mother, who lives in Michigan, she comes out for the third book. And then in Cash Out, he and his friends are going to Vegas for his mother's wedding. So this one actually takes place on the road. and of course, bad things happen.
They always do. Well, I'm just interested. So is it like a murder mystery? All of these are centered around a murder?
Yeah, the Pink's books are really kind of, they're cozies with a few liberties that I've taken. Usually a cozy is not set in a larger town, but because I'm focusing on a gay neighborhood, it's a little bit insular. And a group of particular friends, you know, they definitely qualify as, and they're amateur detectives, and it's kind of that end of the mystery spectrum. Whereas the Boys Town books are much more gritty, kind of noirish books.
Mm-hmm. So when you go to write, how long does it take you to do a book, roughly?
Once I get going, 10 or 12 weeks, which sounds really fast. When I went to film school, I studied screenwriting, and we had to write a script every 10 weeks. So I learned to write fast.
And so what do you, so if someone is brand new and they're interested in writing like you do, and getting into it, what would you give them for advice?
Oh, well, I think I'd start by asking questions. You know, what are they interested in? What kind of things, what books do they like? You know, I think a great piece of advice, and I don't remember who said this originally, but, you know, you do need to write books that you'd like to read, because you spend a lot of time reading your own work. As you develop it. So, you know, you can't just write something because you think it's commercial. You know, you have to write what you like and what you want to read. It's a starting point, certainly.
It's really interesting. Do you have any, do you ever get writer's block, that sort of story or a feeling where you're frustrated and you can't seem to write?
Not really. Not in a very long time. I do occasionally run into a block with a particular book, and I have set books aside for years and gone back and finished them much later for that reason. But I don't know that I wouldn't call it a writer's block, because I'll just start a different project.
Yeah, you change or you do something different.
You know, this is how I make my living, so I can't afford a writer's block. I
can't afford to stop at the same time. But how does, like, when things like, okay, now 2020 comes along, you know, we've got the Black Lives Matters and protests, we've got COVID, we've got Trump, we've got a lot of things going on. So, you know, it's kind of a little bit, you know, you isolate, there's little weird stuff going on. People are nervous. There's a lot of panic. Does that change your outcome? Does it change the way you write? Like, and I mean this in a sense of, okay, so you got all these dark things going on in the outside world. And if you turn on the TV, it's, you know, it's pretty negative, you know, anywhere you go. So do you get kind of in a darker form?
It does have an effect, you know. I mean, certainly when I was younger, it would be hard to write during periods of stress. Now I can have the ability to kind of hide in my work. And certainly, I was trying to work on something lighter, and then I just decided, nah, I need to work on something dark right now. I've done that. Although honestly, then this is a slight change of subject, but when you were just describing 2020, I was like, God, I wish I was going to live to be like 95, because this is someday going to be a wonderful period for someone to set stories in and pick up all of this great nostalgia. You know, all because it's so much to work with, you know, as a writer. It's like, oh my God. this is really going to be such a distinctive period to recall.
It will sound almost unbelievable to people in 30 years.
Oh my God, absolutely.
Right? A lot of the stuff that comes out and when it gets written about, people are going to go, oh, how would they do that? That doesn't sound right. You know what I mean? That's going to be a common
thing. I
hope
it doesn't disappear. Because if you think about it, the pandemics and things that we experienced in 1919 and in that part of the 20th century, they're not written about very much. You know, suddenly we're seeing all of these historical pictures of people in masks and, you know, it's like, oh my God, that was very real. People lived with this and we don't have that literature to rely on. It just didn't get written about very much. Whereas, you know, we have a ton of literature about World War I and World War II, you know, which were, of course, very important, but fewer people died.
Right. Right.
So we don't really have, you know, we didn't lay down for ourselves the blueprint on how to deal with this.
Yeah, it's kind of unusual. It's strange how and what people write about and what gets reproduced over the years, because maybe there were things that just weren't kept.
Well, that could be true. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, it's unfortunate. Yeah, it's kind of a weird thing. I always find it interesting. What do you think of if you were to go back in time, like, what do you like? Mysteries and murder stories from the 60s, let's say, as compared to now, there's quite a difference in the style of writing. Do you think the style was better back then, or a better form, better written?
You know, I don't know that I'm broadly enough read to really talk too much about that. I have most of my historical mystery reading is from the 30s, you know, Dashiell Hammett and Raymond Chandler. And I don't really read, I have not really read a lot of mysteries from the 60s. And I do read some now, but writing as much as I do makes it harder to read because I basically read all day.
So you want to get away from it, yeah.
Absolutely. So, I mean, I do really love noir stuff, you know, from the 30s and 40s. And I do like a lot of contemporary books. You know, I like Michael Connelly a lot, and just finished his latest Lincoln Lawyer book. But I don't know that I really can make a judgment about what's going on in the mystery scene based on the few things that I do read.
Where do you see yourself in 10 years?
Oh, at the computer, by the end.
Oh, maybe it'll be tapped into your brain by then. Well, I mean, are you just going to keep writing mysteries, or do you think you'll reach out and kind of go into other areas?
I have written some kind of romantic comedy books. When I was in film school, I would go back and forth between rom-com and thrillers. And I do often do that. So I have a couple of different books that I've written. I've written a ghost book. I've written a book called Femme, which is about gender expression. And they're comedic little books that people like. So, and I've written a time travel book, which actually kind of comes from my enjoyment of nostalgia and history.
Would you have like a paranormal side too, or something like that?
I don't go too much further than ghosts. Yeah. I mean, I thought about, you know, there is a whole paranormal mystery genre, which I've read books like that and enjoyed them, but I don't know that I haven't really wanted to do one yet. So,
Interesting world. Wow. So do you have a website, or do you have a place that you like people to go, one place to find you and find out all your stuff?
I do have a website, which is MarshallThorntonAuthor.com. And I'm on Facebook and actually very accessible that way as well. So,
well, a lot of people are, it seems like, nowadays.
Yeah. I mean, and I have, you know, a little author group on there and stuff. So, and I have a mailing list that you can access on my website. I'd let people know about sales and things like that, books coming out.
Well, that's great. That's great. So what are your outside influences? Do you have any?
Influences beyond writing?
Yeah, beyond writing. Outside of writing.
You mean like things that I like?
Yeah.
I mean, I like cooking and gardening and movies. And,
All the good stuff.
Yeah, yeah. I've actually been very into gardening. I'm in the process of hopefully building a house soon. And I'm looking forward. So it would be the first time I've ever lived in a house that I owned. I have lived in apartments that I owned, but this is the first time I have my own backyard.
Well, that's good. It gets tiring, all the maintenance.
Oh, yeah. It is actually not a very large backyard. So
Yeah. So, you know. It's all great for the first while, but the novelty wears off a little bit when you have to keep on trimming and cutting and all that stuff. But
yeah, well, I'm actually not planning a lawn. I'm planning a more natural look, and I'm in northern Michigan, and so a lot of people up here do natural gardens and stuff to help support, you know, the bees and the butterflies and everything that come through here. And not a big fan of big lawns and having to take care of them.
Yeah, yeah.
So I'm actually looking at my yard, looking at my property, I don't want to work a lot, and I like to help nature. So what am I going to stick in the ground and cross my fingers?
Yeah, it can work. It can work. You never know. Well, certainly I've had a pleasure talking to you, and I'm going to put your books and website up on ours so people listening can do one click, find you, say hi, do whatever, buy your book. And, hey, you know, cash out. So video stores, so do you think people know what they are nowadays?
Well, you know, people might.
Did you ever think that would happen? That's kind of crazy if you think, you know, when we, back the day, you go out and rent videos all the time, and even when it went to DVD, do you ever think that would all go away?
Not really, although in retrospect, I wonder why I think that, because, you know, media has just been changing all the time since the 70s.
Yeah.
So, yeah. I mean, I guess at this point, you know, everything's streaming, and it's hard to imagine how it's going to change from that, but maybe it will.
Yeah, things just move on. You expect things to change, but I didn't foresee going into the whole streaming and all this stuff, because you know that people that make movies and do all that want to make money, right? So
right. And it all just becomes cheaper and cheaper.
Yeah. So.
Is a problem. You know, certainly, you know, Hollywood, where I worked for more than a decade, it's a mature business, and it's hard for them to try to figure out how to make money, you know, because they don't have, you know, when you have a new business like Google, you know, they're figuring out how to make money, and they find all these different ways to do it. And whereas like a mature business like the movie industry, it's hard to shift, and it's hard to expand at the rate that the financial world wants you to.
Yeah. Do you like the publishing world, the way it's gone, the way it's, you know, Amazon, and then now there's a lot of other options out there. So do you like the way that publishing's gone?
Yes and no. It's, you know, there's a lot more opportunity for indies. You know, most of my stuff now is mostly self-published, because publishers don't want what I write. You know, they don't want gay fiction. They don't want gay mystery. They've like decided that you know, their model, the publishing model has shifted to the same model that film studios use, which is they just want big blockbusters. They don't really want to, they don't want to make money on a lot of little books. They want, you know, just a couple big ones, and they're happy with that. And so they really, you know, they've dropped whole genres that they just have no interest in anymore. And so that's challenging, but at the same time, you know, if you're writing one of those genres, it's not that difficult to step in and say, oh, I'm just going to do it myself and keep all the money.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I just wonder, because there's also a lot of people that just, there's a lot of bad stuff that goes out now, right? Because there's nobody to really, I don't know, regulate it. Not that that's not the right word, but there's not a lot of people to check over things, you know?
Well, you know, people assume that a big publisher is acting as a gatekeeper to keep bad work out. But, you know, I read mainstream books and they're not that great.
Yeah, I know. I think what it is that they're crossing over now. I think that they have their low end and high end. And I think self-publishing does as well.
Yeah, I mean, certainly if you're going to self-publish, you really have to, you know, have a good editor, which I'm lucky enough to have, and you have to be able to come up with decent covers, and you have to have people proof your work for you, you know, and you have to recognize that people are going to hold you to a higher standard than they do Macmillan, you know, because they're out to get you.
How does that, that's interesting, how do you feel about critics? How do you feel about the access that so many people have, and they can write things about you?
Well, I would tell a new writer not to go to Goodreads until you have at least 1,000 reviews.
Yeah.
You know, once you have a number of good reviews, then it becomes a lot easier to look at somebody and say, eh, whatever, you know, who's being critical. And, you know, it's also important to look at how they're being critical. Going back to my education again, it's like, you know, our primary class was to read each other's work and sit around and criticize it. And so occasionally people in reviews will say something constructive. And, you know, I actually listened to that. So I've learned, you know, you look at certain reviews and it's like, oh, this person's just mad.
Right. Yeah.
But at other times it's like, well, this is, you know, okay, that's a fair criticism. You know.
Yeah.
You have to also remember that it's like you can't take the bad reviews very seriously, and you cannot take the really great reviews that seriously. You kind of have to look in the middle.
Yeah. You kind of have to, yeah. You have to do it grounded. I mean, you can't write something for everyone, right? Like, not everyone's going to like you.
No, you can't. Although, you know, it's also, though, sometimes it's really valuable to read reviews because you get surprised. I once had this straight guy wrote me a letter because he'd gotten one of my books for free on Goodreads without even knowing what it was. And he wrote me a letter about how he started reading the book and just really was interested in it and surprised and at the same time connected with it. You know, it's like he saw the commonality of experience, but he also thought differently about things because he saw, oh, well, that actually makes sense. You know, it's like, this is how people are different and this is how people are the same. And he was able to really enjoy the book. So that was actually, you know, things like that happen all the time. And it's one of the things that makes looking at things like reviews worth it, but not until you've got enough.
Yeah. 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 Cause it can really depress you, right? It could really,
It's not unusual for a new writer to start out, and there's enough people out there that are like wanting to get in your way that you'll have 5 bad reviews and that's all you'll have for a while.
Yeah. 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 And you don't want it to throw you. You want to keep focused on what you're doing rather than.
Absolutely.
You know, some petty review.
The answer to most questions for writers is write another book.
Keep moving. Keep moving.
Yeah, it's like people say, well, you know, what do you do for promotion? Write another book. What do you do if the book doesn't work out? Write another book.
Well, there you go. It's, yeah, it's all good, you know. You keep moving, you know, and it works out. Well, it's been a pleasure. Again, we've been talking to Marshall Thornton and talking about his mysteries and his new book's coming out on Christmas Day. Cash Out. Thank you for being on the show.
Thank you for having me.
To find out more about our show, guests, or to listen to past shows from our archive, please go to www.houseofmysteryradio.com.
Show is over for now.
Was it as good for you as it was for me?
Well, good night.
This has been a production of Something Weird Media.
I'll be back.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
You've been listening to the House of Mystery radio show. To find out more about our guests, hosts, or shows, go to www.houseofmystery.com.
Show is over for now.
Was it as good for you as it was for me?
Well, good night.
This has been a production of Something Weird Media.
I'll be back.